The theme for the month has been promise. And a promise is an assurance of things are going to be like this. That's the way things are going to happen. Making big promises is what faith communities do. They say, we promise that yes, life is like this, however they present it. You can count on it, and then you can order your life, the meaning of your activities, as if it is so. There's a felt sense of how life really is, or ought to be. We can't prove it, but our experience, the experience of people who've gone before us, confirms this. Faith communities help us affirm how to be at home in the cosmos, how to make our home in the universe. It's sort of, when we say have faith, it's intuiting life as a whole with related wholeness, meaning, comfort, and challenge. We've been working from, it's sort of a personal scripture of mine, the book by Sharon Parks, which is called Big Question, Worthy Dreams. Mentoring young adults in the search for meaning, purpose, and faith. She said that it's been said that home is the most powerful word in the English language. If you think about it, it's where we start from. It's what we aspire to. To be at home is to have a place in the scheme of life, a place where we are comfortable, know that we belong, can be who we are, and can honor, protect, and create what we truly love. She says faith is a quality of human living that at its best takes the form of a quiet confidence and joy which enable one to feel what? To feel at home in the universe. To be deeply at home in the world is to dwell in a worthy faith. A worthy faith. Last week I talked from Sharon's section, Faith as Primal Force of Promise, of a rudimentary sense of trustworthy pattern, connection, wholeness, and relation, a sense of ultimate environment that intends our good. She doesn't say that that exists all the time. She reminds us that again and again we undergo the loss of our most cherished patterns of meaning and anchors of trust as we discover their insufficiency. She says that in the ups and downs of daily life, we experience an ongoing dialogue between, this echoes the reading, an ongoing dialogue between fear and trust, hope and hopelessness, power and powerlessness, alienation and belonging. What's the beginning of that sentence? It doesn't say over the course of the year. It says in the ups and downs of daily life. Yet we learn, though the forms of faith are finite, the promise is kept. This sanctuary, this community emerges from two faith communities, Unitarian and Universalist. They're over 250 years old in America. Two faith communities whose big organizing promises look like this. Last night I heard somebody say that if you asked 1,000 Unitarian Universalists what Unitarian Universalists believe, you'd get 1,000 different opinions. I think that's unfortunate that we can't share what the orientation of our compass is that guides us, not our particular paths, but what is the orientation. Unitarians came out of the Congregationalist movement, the established congregations of New England, but they said that Jesus was not God. Okay, you could only have one God, so they were Unitarians. But they said there was a moral law in the heart. There was a way of knowing how to be in right relationship, if you use the language we understand now. And they use the phrase that we can actually grow in likeness to God, or grow in likeness to religious exemplars. Lazarus. They had an exalted view of human possibility with Jesus at that time as their exemplar. It means we can improve. The Universalists, what was their promise? Their promise was that there was no hell. There's no hell where you would be condemned and spend eternity in agony, paying for, being punished for whatever you've done wrong in this life. Think back to the language of home, being at home in the universe. It's a lot different when there is no hell hanging over you. And then they said there really was punishment, because you had to have some punishment, people thought. And that hell was in what? In the everyday. In the everyday, not being in right relationship. But the promise was that you can get there. You can get into that right relationship because it exists. That's the promise. It's there to be found. It's all around. It's all around you in the nature of the universe. Look on the front of your order of service. And that picture that's there, it's the result of a process. So I come into the office now, and Sandy has choices for me to pick. And the choice that she loved, Sandy's our office manager. This is so much fun. The choice that she loved is this one, and I couldn't quite go with it. And for you over there that can't see it when I tape it up, I couldn't quite go. Oh, the choir, sorry about that. I wasn't sure whether it was no hell or hell no. I can't quite run with that one. I don't think I can leave it taped to the pulpit either. You can speak to me about my own personal problems later, but that's exactly what that says. And the reason we're talking about universalism in September is that on September 30th of 1770, the first Universalist sermon was preached in America by John Murray. And it's a great story. John Murray was a Calvinist preacher in England who read a piece by James Relly. There was a big revival going on in Britain. And you think about it, if you sit around with the notion that only a few people are saved, that there's an elect, you know, and they're the only ones to be saved, you're bound to start thinking about, that doesn't make sense, you know? So that's what they were doing, and preachers were doing that. Well, John Murray was a devout Calvinist preacher. He didn't like this universalist heresy. But by process, he came around to it and actually had a conversion. Well, as a result of the conversion, and we'll tell this piece of the story even here in Hendersonville, his church became a lot smaller. And he fell on hard times. His wife died, his one-year-old son died, three sisters died, and a brother died within a short period of time, and he was in debt. So he got on a ship to come to America the 1760s, okay, to come to America. And this is a great piece of the story. The ship ran aground off the coast of New Jersey, right? It was on its way to New York. It ran aground. And the captain had him unload some of the cargo into a sloop that had come by. And John Murray was assigned to ride with the cargo to New York to see that it, It made it. So he got off the ship and was on the sloop. Well, in the morning tide, it floated the ship with the lighter load. The wind had changed, and the ship sailed to New York, but the sloop couldn't follow it. So Murray only had, imagine this, you're getting on a sloop and getting off the ship, and the only thing you take with you is your Bible. Now that's commitment in some direction. And just his purse. I don't know what was in that, but they called it a purse. So they went ashore to find food. And when they came ashore, he was sent to the home of Thomas Potter. It turns out, imagine this, this is in the 18th century, the coast of New Jersey. He was sent ashore, and he was sent to the home of Thomas Potter. Well, 10 years ago, Thomas Potter had built a meeting house in order to hold Universalist conversations out in the woods of New Jersey. And so Thomas Potter walks up and, I mean, John Murray walks up and Thomas Potter says, I've been waiting a long time for you to arrive. So he tries to talk him into preaching the sermon on Sunday. John Murray says, I can't because I've got to get back on the sloop here and sail and meet my ship in New York, get to New York. But he says, if the wind doesn't change, I'll preach the sermon. So he ended up preaching the first Universalist sermon in America. The wind shifted. He got on the sloop and went away to New York, eventually founding the first Universalist church in America in Gloucester, Massachusetts, and going on becoming a chaplain in the Revolutionary War and a founder of the Universalist Church in America. But the other piece of the story is we didn't know any of that. We weren't thinking that when we, Catherine put the prelude, Wind Calling, in the choir's song for the morning. We were just reading that, and Catherine came into the office and said, look at this. It's all about the wind changing and then taking him to New York. It was that wind shift that brought us here. And it's such a huge difference in our community. Just 2 weeks ago, I was talking to a woman who would be coming here, except this is a kind of a different version of it. Her husband wants to go to a more explicitly Christian church. So she goes where her husband goes, but she'd experienced a serious loss in her family and was looking for a grief and loss support group. She happened to see that there was one at Mud Creek Baptist Church, and she started going. And if you know in those groups, you get to know people as people. And one thing you do in a grief and loss group is you discuss the things that are heavy on your heart and that are bothering you about the loss of somebody or a death. And she shared that one of the big concerns was a woman who was a good friend of hers who came to say she had been having dreams about how the rapture had occurred. Now that's a part of that theology of the elect. That can, Paul, is this any way to fix this kind of booming here? There you go. That she'd been having dreams about how the rapture had occurred, and she was worried about her friends who were left behind, and that they were left behind, she wouldn't see them, and that they were going to hell. Now, to have one person share that is something, but then everybody else in the group nodded their heads and shared that they had had similar dreams. So just listen to the difference in how they are approaching the world and experience being at home in the universe to, I'll just share for me. I never dream that. It's not one of my worries. And that's what Universalists and Universalism and the people in this faith community have been telling us. You don't have to live that way. And it works not living that way. The membership of Mud Creek Baptist Church is close to 3,000 people. That's 3% if you just take that one congregation. That's 3% of, let's say, roughly of the population of Henderson County. Okay. And if you took that as a percentage of the population of Hendersonville, that's close to what? 20%, roughly. So that tells you what a different version there is here of the notion of the elect, the saved, and how it plays an important role in our community. 250 years later. We have a very different way of being in the world of living. No hell, an inclusive universe. And what that means is it's not exclusive. That's a key piece, that's a difference too. You'll see that in the social constraints and the, I would say even in the politics. Not exclusive. The promise is broken and reformed every day. So then if you think about this with this larger context and look at 461, nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. So you'll say, what about the problems of that? And we're saved. That's that language. We are saved by hope. There is the promise of hope. That's basically how to read it. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in an immediate context of history. There is the promise of those who've gone before us that says it can make sense. It can come together. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. But we know that there's love around us that we can be a part of. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved. We can experience forgiveness even of ourselves. That was one of the problems of Unitarianism, that because you could be better, you almost created your own hell because you're always striving to be better and you never settle. And the first word of today's piece, relax, relax. We're all saved. Relax. We're all loved. Relax, we're all good. And the universalists say that's foundational. The sun shines on everybody. I didn't bring my water bottle this morning. I did, but it's over in the office. But last service, I talked about using water bottles and refilling them with water rather than just going out and buying plastic. Well, a lot of people came up to me afterwards and talk to me as if that's a good green message. That's a good environmental message. But I wanted it to be more, not just boxed in like that, but a reminder of the big promise that we live in every day, that we're a part of something larger than ourselves. We're a part of a gift. And the water is part of that. I can't really say, hold the sunshine in something to remind you. But the water bottle is that reminder of what flows through us. It's not to be taken for granted. We're a part of it. And then when we fill our own water bottle, when it's emptied, when brokenness happens, alienation happens, belonging can return. You know, when things are hurting and have gone wrong, joy and love can return. You can refill your bottle. And I would share with you, not to make too much about it, that was a multi-generational service, so we're doing it for the children, but also for the adults. It's something to hold on to connect with that universalist message that's real in the sense of us being an integral part, all of us, of creation, an equal part. No hell, or hell no. A loving God, an inclusive universe, one human family, one nature, one origin, one destiny. And the way I frame it now, because of my ecological, environmental background that just brought me to this work, is I would say one family of being, of the creation, one gift, an inclusive universe. That's a promise. Relax into it, because you are at home. I'm not sure if it works to drink the water now. So please stand. Well, are there any questions or comments? We got time for that a little bit. Anybody? Ron.
Yeah. I did want to mention one thing you struck with.
Here, you want to use the mic?
Yeah.
Let's see. There you go.
And the worst word in a human language is exclusive. Some wisdom there, I think.
Anybody else? Any questions? Comments? Well, I think too, the big thing is that many of us don't believe in hell, but we don't really buy into just the notion of faith or meaning-making as being okay if it comes from us and from our experience and connecting with experience. We're always living religiously, apologetically, and insecure. And I think that's the important distinction. Just because Mud Creek is huge doesn't mean you have to go there, you know? And it doesn't mean that coming here and working with this orientation is any less right for you. And I think that's the key piece of this whole thing, because we're all loved. We're all a part of the creation, and religion as an orientation helps us then find out how to move in a way where we can relax and we can feel at home in the universe.